This is Mark Lane.
This is Robert Groden.
This is Dick Russell.
This is Dr. David Mantic.
This is Cyril Weck.
This is Jim DiEugenio.
This is Jerry Polycott.
This is Bill Pepper.
This is Governor Jesse Ventura, and you're listening to Black Op Radio.
Video computers online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T-minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T-minus 25 seconds. T-minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are go.
T-minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T-minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2,
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. Today, we have the privilege of speaking to James Douglas. Hello, James.
Hello, Len.
It's great to speak to you again. You are a remarkable author that I think everyone has looked up to. Your groundbreaking book, JFK and the Unspeakable, was one of the best books on the topic. I highly recommend it. I had the pleasure of interviewing you 6 times, one for every chapter of that book when the book was released.
Yeah.
But today we're going to speak about the latest book, which is Gandhi and the Unspeakable. His final experiment with truth. I guess to start the topic off, can you give us a brief background of what got you into this topic? And I meant writing about it.
Yes, I've been absorbed with Gandhi since I was a student at Santa Clara University in the 1950s. And Gandhi was my way into understanding Jesus. And I wrote about the nonviolence of Jesus for a number of years, especially through the understanding of Gandhi and also the process by which Gandhi understood his own life and his mission to the world. What he called experiments with truth is the way I've tried to write and, for that matter, live after learning it from Gandhi by reading his autobiography many years ago. So Gandhi has been with me for a long time, but specifically in relation to this book, I was working on the book following up the JFK one that you mentioned, JFK and the Unspeakable. I was working on its successor, which is Martin Malcolm and the Unspeakable, on Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and their assassinations. But for the first chapter, I decided to write about Gandhi because it seemed that he was a good lead-in to Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And I learned that Gandhi's assassination involved some of the same elements that are basic to all of those 4 key assassinations of the 60s. So I began to write at greater length on it, and eventually it became its own book. So I didn't plan to write a book about Gandhi, although he's been in my mind and heart for many, many years. But because of the assassinations of the 4, Martin, Malcolm, JFK, and RFK, I got led into Gandhi.
Now, the book isn't as big as the previous one, but
yes,
I recommend it. So to listeners of Black Op Radio, I recommend it. And if you know, if James Douglas has put in the pen to paper, it's worth reading. So a couple of things that stood out was I did not know much about Gandhi, except that I thought he was just widely respected everywhere. And I come against this parallel about John F. Kennedy that I thought, well, he was such a great man. Everyone loved him. And the further I get into it, I find he's surrounded by enemies. And
that's true.
The same thing here happens, that as I get into that, that he is actually enemies on every side. It's hard for him to continue with this nonviolence where that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Now, I guess I should back up. I had no idea that his experiment, as it were, started in South Africa.
Yes.
And why don't we give listeners just a little background to that? Because I just thought it was in India the whole time with England, but it wasn't.
Well, Gandhi went to South Africa because he was such a failure in India as a lawyer. That was his profession. When he returned from England, he was trained as a lawyer. And he was offered a position in South Africa at a point where he wanted to, in a sense, start all over again because he had not done very well in India, to put it mildly. He just did not succeed as a lawyer. And he then accepted a position in South Africa, and in the 1890s and the first decade of the 20th century, he was first of all a lawyer and then a person who was representing the entire Indian community in South Africa as he tried to overcome their suppression by the government, which was a kind of prophetic anticipation of what the African National Congress and Nelson Mandela would do in the 20th century in overcoming apartheid. And they were drawing on the example of Gandhi in the 90s and the first part of the 20th century. Mandela says that explicitly, as I cite him in the book. Gandhi established a pattern of nonviolent resistance through the first 20-plus years of his career as an activist, and that all occurred in South Africa.
It's an interesting background, and I was also pleasantly surprised doing some research to find quite a bit of videos on this on YouTube, that if
yes.
people, you know, once they get your book and go through it, there is both sides of the story, and there's quite a bit on YouTube as well.
Yes. Well, I encourage everybody to learn as much as they can about Gandhi, because not only his assassination, which I wrote specifically about, but his vision of nonviolent transformation of the world is critical to all of us, and especially at this moment in history when everything is coming apart or coming together, depending on whether you're looking at the overall political process in this country especially, or whether you're looking at nonviolent movements around the globe. Those are the downs and the ups of this situation we're living in it right now. And the way Dr. Martin Luther King put it was nonviolence or non-existence, which was drawing on the vision of Gandhi, who said that many times in many ways. And his alternative, which he called Satyagraha, truth force, which is equivalent to love force and soul force, he said that was the most powerful force in the universe. I think he's right. And it's a force that we can experiment with, as he did and as Dr. King did and as Nelson Mandela did in other ways in South Africa. And it's a force that can change this world in a way that will allow us not only to survive, but to thrive together in peace and justice.
Right, truth. Now, his first name was Mohandas, but he was called
yes.
Mahatma, the Great
yes.
Soul.
Yes.
So, in one way, he was respected by people who met him. As a matter of fact, you recount a few stories of would-be assassins that had come up to do him in, and after 5 or 10 minutes of him just talking to, he was able to dissuade the person. And in fact, I think there's one anecdote there that when someone had tried to assassinate him, rather than charging him, he invited the guy to live with him for a week. He said,
That was the man who actually did assassinate him. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's what he's saying. If you had a chance to have dinner with me and live with me for a week, I might change your mind completely. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
The man refused, and that man was Nathuram Godse, who was the man who pulled the trigger on him and killed him on January 30th, 1948. And that incident occurred several years before in what was an earlier effort to kill him. And he offered Godse a week with Gandhi, which almost anybody else in the world would have jumped at, but Godse knew in his heart that if he did that, he might not be able to carry out the mission that he had been basically assigned by his teacher, a man named Savarkar.
So let's talk about him just a little bit, because this is where the parallels are, that it's an orchestrated effort to remove someone. Although it is, appears as if there's a lone assassin, and that's what history or the press would like you to take out of it, you recognize different groups vying for power. Someone is in their opposition, and they have someone removed. And this is the parallel from what you might say were great leaders, that finally they came up against a power that said, we've had enough of this guy. He's got to be removed.
Yes, the man who was the mastermind of Gandhi's assassination, Vinayak Damodar Savarkar, is a man that Gandhi had known for many, many years. He had met him on a trip from South Africa to England in 1906, and then on a second trip to England in 1909, he saw him again. And in the 1909 trip to England, Gandhi arrived just after an assassination had occurred in London. It was the assassination of a man who was the British member of the government who was in charge of the affairs of state in India. So it was a high-level assassination, and was carried out by an Indian student, a man named Dhingra. The man who was killed, Sir William Curzon Wiley, the political aide to the Secretary of State for India, he was shot to death at a very prominent gathering of primary movers of Indian policy. Of course, this was imperial policy while India was part of the British Empire. And the assassin, Madanlal Dhingra, who was an engineering student, he knew the man that he killed, William Curzon Wiley. Wiley, the political aide to the Secretary of State, was a friend of his family in India. And even more than that, his father had basically assigned Wiley, asked Wiley, this prominent British politician, to look after his son in London while he was studying there. But the assassin, Dhingra, came under the influence of Savarkar at a place called the India House, where Indian students gathered and lived in London while they were there studying. And virtually all of them had become radicalized in a violent sense, seeing assassination in particular as the way to overcome the British government. And Savarkar had told Dhingra, who came under his influence, to carry out an assassination by killing this man Wiley. And he did, at a gathering of the National Indian Association in the heart of London, where they were having a dinner for all the major politicians. And Dhingra came up and shot Wiley when Wiley thought he was going to shake his hand. When Gandhi arrived about 3 days later, 4 days later in London, this was